Thank you for the introduction. So this is joint work with my PhD advisor, Emery Berger, at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And so I'll be presenting cause finding code that counts with causal profiling. So I'll motivate this all with a story. So a few months ago, in a valley that's really not so far away from here, this is Bob. And Bob has an idea for a startup. So what Bob wants to do is have you take out your phone, and with your phone, you take a picture because you see a cat that looks kind of weird and grumpy, and so you want to know if anybody else has seen that cat before. His service sends it off to some web database, and it looks through things, and it comes back and tells you, I found 8 million similar images of grumpy-looking cats. And he wants to call his startup Ogle. Ogle's going to totally disrupt image search. So as you do when you have a startup idea, you go build a prototype. So Bob builds himself a prototype. So like I said, you take a picture of your grumpy-looking cat. It gets sent off to some server in an Ogle database somewhere, or Ogle warehouse somewhere. That server sends things off to the database, saves the image so it can send it back in future results, finds similar images, pulls them out of the database, and then sends them back to the user. So you could also think of this like a simple parallel program. And so if we think of this nice vertical bar here as the beginning of the program and we forked off to two threads, one thread might compress the image. Since we're going to be storing every image anyone sends us, we should probably save a little space. And then you actually insert it in the database and save it. Meanwhile, you can take that image that was sent in and extract some features, get a nice list of features from the image, search through your database for images that have those same features, and finally send them back to the user. And then once both of these tasks have finished, you can conclude this transaction and move on. And so Bob is smart. He remembers his undergrad OS course, and so he doesn't want to write and read from the database at the same time, and so he protects that section with locks. All right, so Bob builds his prototype Ogle. It's completely disrupting image search, but there's one problem. So Ogle is way too slow, so that's not going to work. And so the standard advice to Bob would be to go use a software profiler to look at the code for Ogle and figure out how to make it faster. So he runs his sort of off the shelf gprof, oprofile, perf, whatever you like, on Ogle. And it gives him some output that looks a little bit like this. And so you can see one column here. We have the number of calls to each function. They're all ones. And then we have the total runtime for each of those functions. And the idea here is that profilers help you find code that executes frequently, and they help you find code that runs for a long time. And the assumption has always been that this is a reasonable place to look to actually improve performance, but does that make sense for Bob? So I have a hypothetical question for you. Now imagine if we took Ogle in its current state, where it's loading like this, and we instead execute this way. So we're now loading, but blinking much faster. So I would argue this code is frequently executed. It runs just as many times as everything else. They were all ones. And it runs for a long time because it took just as long as all of the processing we were doing on the server side. So profilers do not a particularly good job finding code that's important for optimizing things when you have any kind of concurrency in the system. And if we want to deal with that concurrency, we're going to need better tools. So going back to our sample parallel Ogle implementation here, what would actually make it faster? So if we imagine for a moment that we had a magic box that we could take our program and stick it in the box, and it would tell us this part of the code, the searching the database, is important, how would it actually tell us that? What would the information that we want look like? And so one way you could do that is with something called a causal profile. And what a causal profile does is it tells you where optimizations would make a difference in the performance of the program. And so a causal profile is just a graph. So we've got three of our five blocks here, searching, feature extraction, compression. And on our graph, we have the x-axis, which is how much we speed up one of those three parts of the program, and the y-axis, which tells you how much faster the whole program is going to go. And so you can imagine maybe if we speed up the database searching, we'd get some nice payoff for a while. But beyond a certain point, we've got a new bottleneck, and we're not going to get anything more. Maybe compression doesn't matter at all. We should just leave it alone. And possibly feature extraction is less significant than searching, but we can get a little further if we make larger improvements in that part of the system. And so what this graph is really telling you is that if you find a point on the x-axis here, we said, what if we sped up feature extraction by this much? You can draw your line up and over, and that would tell you your program would run this much faster. And so Bob is still going to have to decide, can I actually make this part of the program faster? But this tells you whether or not it makes a difference. He certainly doesn't want to work on compression. That we know for sure. So how would we actually establish that making this change, speeding up some part of the program by some amount, actually has an effect on the program's performance? So one of the best ways to establish causality is to run an experiment. And that's exactly what a causal profiler would do. So a causal profiler conducts a sequence of what are called performance experiments. And let's imagine for a moment that we could magically speed up our database searching code. So if we take the database searching code and we magically speed it up by a little bit, we can then say if we sped it up by that amount, we measure this improvement in the program's total runtime. And likewise, we could speed it up a little bit more. So for that much, we get a bit more than that. And we could look at a different block. We could look at saving and say if we speed saving up by a little bit, we actually don't see any improvement in the program's total runtime. So we're going to have to actually do this without magically speeding things up. Otherwise, Bob would just do this, and there wouldn't be a talk to give you all. So the way we do that with a causal profiler is something called virtual speed up. So we can speed up a particular block, like sending results back, by instead slowing everything else down whenever it runs. So the idea here is that every time the send results back code runs, we pause all of the other threads that are running at the same time by some amount. And we've shifted the sort of the total runtime over. We also need to account for that pause in the baseline runtime that we're comparing to. So we shift that over. It's a little bit pale. I don't know if you can see that. So what that tells us is that speeding up the sending results code by the amount of this delay would have this much effect on the total runtime of the program. And we can go over and actually plot that on our causal profile graph. So you can do a little bit more, increase the size of the delay to increase the size of the virtual speedup, and we see no additional effect, so it just plateaus. If we look at another block, maybe feature extraction, so feature extraction runs, so we slow down the other thread, which happens to be running compression, which we then have to account for the delay in the total runtime. We can go over and plot that on the graph as well. And I hope you'll believe me that if I continue this process, it actually just goes on and on until we hit 100% speed up. And then one last one to look at, which is the compression. So we can speed up compression by a little bit by pausing the other thread whenever it runs. And we end up getting no change. And then if we go a little bit further than that and we speed up compression by a bit more with a slightly larger delay, something funny happens because now we have this lock in our system, and the first thread, the one on top, is actually going to arrive at the lock before the second thread does. So now that we've increased the size of that delay, we've actually changed the order that the threads will acquire the lock. And our runtime is now off the slide. And even when we account for the delay, it still looks like we've actually slowed the program down by speeding up part of the program. And so we get this decline in the causal profile. So if we go back and we do a little bit more speed up, you can see things get a little bit better. And that actually continues. And I could keep going, but I'll just fill these all in. And so we end up with a causal profile that looks like this, and that would tell us where we might actually go speed up parts of the program. So now another question that goes back to the old wisdom on profilers is, does the total runtime of the program really matter? Ogle is a service. It's always going to be running. If it stops running, that means something crashed. That's probably not what Bob was going for. There are two things that Bob really cares about. So he cares about how fast can results come back out of the database, and how long does a single user have to wait between when they issue their request and when they get a response? It was the original motivating slow response. So progress points are another component of a causal profiler. And since Bob wants to send responses as fast as possible, he marks that as a progress point. All that means is that something good has happened. We're trying to do as much of this as possible, as fast as we can. And every time this code runs, we just keep account of the execution. And in Ogle, this large system, there are actually many transactions being handled all the time, and they're all executing their progress points at various points. And so One progress point allows us to actually measure the throughput of this system. So the faster we can reach progress points, the higher our throughput at that point in the program. And what the causal profile is actually telling you is that if I sped up some block of code, searching, compression, something like that, how much more frequently will I be running the sending results code where the progress point was placed? So for the other component, we were actually looking at response time or latency. And so to measure response time, you need to use two progress points. So you place one at the beginning and one at the end of the transaction. And so all these are doing is they're just incrementing and decrementing a counter, the number of transactions currently being processed. And we can take advantage of Little's law, which comes in handy here. And what that tells us is that the average latency over some period of time is just the number of requests in flight, the number of transactions we're actively processing at this moment, divided by the throughput. And so we can measure transactions, because that's what these points are doing. And the throughput is just the arrival rate at one of those two progress points. It doesn't really matter which. It should be equal. And now you can actually establish the average latency of a request over some window of time. And your causal profile would tell you how your improvements to a particular piece of code would affect your average latency. So using cause, a causal profiler, is pretty easy. You just run the program with this cause run dash 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 option in front of it. The program just gets executed as usual, and cause handles all the profiling work and produces some output in a nice log of all the experiments it ran. And then once you've collected enough data on the program, it actually will produce a causal profile for you. So now that we've seen how all of this works, let's actually use it to go improve Ogle. So if we go back to our prototype diagram of Ogle, we've got some major components here, and a few of them resemble some applications from the Parsec benchmark suite. So we are doing a little bit of compression. That was in the original model. So dedupe is a compression program in Parsec, so we'll use that. Ferret does image comparisons. That's certainly going to be a big part of this. And then finally, we have a database, and since it's a prototype, Bob decides to go with SQLite. So let's look at these three applications, and we can start with Ferret. So for those of you who haven't dug into the innards of Parsec, Ferret is an image comparison application, and it uses a pipeline parallel model. So it has these four major stages, and every request to Ferret gets passed off between these stages. There are also input and output stages that deal with the, sort of the input from a file system and general output. And of the four major stages, or of the six stages, four get sort of a standard thread pool assigned to each stage. So when we run Ferret with cause, we end up with these three important looking lines. So these are actual causal profiles. They're not the pretty colored ones that I had before. And each of these lines corresponds to an important call into an image querying library in three of the four major stages. So ranking, indexing, and segmentation all appear to have one line that just is most important. And feature extraction doesn't seem to be important at all, so it probably doesn't need as many threads as all the others. So we just shift some of those threads over to the more important ones, and this reassignment of threads gives us a 21% speed up in the program. So we can actually go back and figure out how causal profiling's predictions match up with the reality that we observe here. So we started with 16 threads assigned to ranking, and we bumped that up to 22. So that means that we are increasing the throughput at the ranking stage by 27%. They happen to all be independent queries, so we know this is actually speeding it up by 27%. We can go back to our causal profile graph, find a point that's relatively close to that, and draw our line over to the program speed up prediction for that, which if you zoom in really close, looks right about 21%, which is exactly what we observed in this case. So that's Ferret. Let's look at dedupe next. So as you might guess from its name, dedupe does compression with deduplication. And the way that works is it takes an image and another image that maybe it's seen before. It breaks them up into pieces that appear to be similar or distinct. And then it will actually store them in a table. And so now our images become references to image fragments. And so, say, grumpycat1.jpg is a reference to the blank header and footer with the middle section. And funisawful.jpg is the text header and footer with the same central portion of the image. So it's obviously more sophisticated than this, but this is the general idea. And dedupe uses a big hash table to hold all these pieces. And you hash a fragment of the data that you provide, you stick it in an index associated with that hash function, and you continue. And the hope is that you don't get too many things into one bucket, but it does happen. And the hash function, or hash table, is actually accessed concurrently by many threads. And so the developers, like Bob, they remember their undergrad OS course, and so they protect each bucket of the hash table with locks. So when we run dedupe with cause, the profiler says that the loop that walks through all the elements in a bucket is an important possible place for optimization. So if we could speed that up, we could speed the whole program up. And so that means that we're getting collisions. And so if we made the hash table bigger, maybe we wouldn't get quite as many collisions. So we try this, and we get no performance improvement. And we actually dug in and discovered we were getting the same number of collisions. But what else could be causing those collisions? Well, it could be our hash function. And so we dug into the hash function. We looked at what it was doing just to make sure that we weren't fooling ourselves here, and found that dedupe has a terrible hash function. So this graph shows you the items per bucket for a subset of the bucket indices. So you can see we've got some hotspots and some empty ones. And of all the buckets in the hash table, 2.3% of them had any items in them at all, and the rest had nothing. So we made a very small change to dedupe. We changed a plus to an XOR, which tends to make your hash function quite a bit better. And we ended up with 82% bucket utilization, which is respectable. It's still, you can do better, but that's pretty good. And just that one change of one operator gave us a 9% speed up in the program's runtime. So this is another case where we can actually go back and see what cause predicted for this change. So if it was the loop that walks over blocks in each bucket that was important, we can look at how many blocks there were in each bucket. So before we fixed the hash function, it was a little under 77. And after fixing the hash function, the average for buckets that were used was just over 2. So that's a 96% speed up in the traversal of that list, because it's 96% shorter. And if we go back to the causal profile graph, we see there was a prediction for 95% of about a 9% program speed up, which is exactly what we observed again. So the last piece of our Ogle prototype that we'll dig into here is SQLite. So SQLite, a very, very simple SQL database. It's nice embedded in a lot of systems, works pretty well. It's a good starting point for a lot of applications, but it's also meant to be fast. They have support for things like threads. And in the code for SQLite, they have this nice macro guard that says, if you are compiling SQLite with thread safety, then initialize this big global config structure and set some of the fields in that structure to functions that it should use for unlocking, getting the size of objects, and moving to the next item in a page cache. And so this is how it gets initialized with thread safety. It gets initialized differently if you don't have thread safety, but it's a one-time write to this struct. Elsewhere in the code, we have three functions that make calls through that structure that was initialized by MacroGuard. And that's an indirect call through a struct. It's not that expensive, but unlocking is not that expensive either. You're really just writing a zero into a bit. The same goes for getting the size of something. You're reading an int out of a header. And this one is my favorite, the page cache fetch. The function is actually just advancing a pointer to the next entry in a linked list. Probably a lot cheaper than making an indirect call. So cause highlights these three lines that make these indirect calls as potential places for optimization. And so if we look at the actual graph for those, we can see if we make a small improvement, there's probably some program speed up. So taking these three lines, changing them to just call the functions directly, so now SQLite only runs in thread safe mode, gives us a 25% speed up in a write-intensive benchmark on SQLite. So we can actually, we can't validate it like we did before, but we can go back to a standard profiler. So if we look at a normal profiler, this was perf, I believe. Top thing here was calling spin locks. If we go down 30 lines, we find our first candidate function, so SQLite 3 memsize. That was 0.09% of total runtime. And a little further down, we find the other two. So collectively, that was 0.15% of total runtime. But by speeding those up, we got a 25% performance improvement in the program. So we can do the same for our other benchmarks. So we got a 25% speed up, fixing 0.15% of the runtime. Dedupe, we got a 9% speed up by looking at a function that had a cumulative amount of 14% of the total runtime, but that was for the whole function, not just the loop that walks over the list. And for Ferret, we got a 21% speed up for some function calls that didn't account for any time at all. It was all spent in the library. So we looked at a few other benchmarks as well. So Memcached, we were able to get almost a little over 9% speed up by removing some unnecessary locks. I talked about SQLite. Lectuals, a small improvement with some manual common sub-expression elimination. Dedupe and Ferret we've seen. We also sped up Fluid Animate and Stream Cluster by removing an include that provided a custom pthread barrier implementation that turned out to be pretty bad. And Swaptions we were able to speed up by about 16% by reordering some loop nests that improved cache locality. So just to wrap up, so we've talked a little bit about what normal profilers tell you. And we looked at parts of a program that might show up highly ranked in a normal profile but aren't necessarily good targets for optimizations. So instead, we look at causal profiling. And causal profiling uses virtual speedup and progress points to perform performance experiments that actually tell you what parts of your program you should focus on to speed up the performance. All right. So thank you for your attention.
Okay, questions?
Stéphane Bermond, Google. Hi. So this is for parallel programs, right? If you have a single thread, it doesn't help.
The
I mean,
base
it still
case,
works, but it doesn't do...
Right, it actually sort of falls back on what a normal profiler would do. Because there's only one thread, delaying other threads has no effect. So.
I just wanted to check.
Yeah.
Still, we've been doing parallel programs for what? Forever? And I don't want to be glib about this, but wow, this is an enormous difference compared to a regular profiler. And you guys are effectively saying a regular profiler is almost useless for a parallel program, right?
It's if you have a perfect mental model of the system, you can get this kind of intuition about it.
Absolutely,
but it doesn't tell
a
you.
Perfect mental model of my system, yes.
Yeah. After digging in these benchmarks, I agree with you.
So my question is then, wow, how come it's 2016? Or 2015 that we're finding this out. Where have you guys been this whole time, kind of question?
I don't know how to answer that question. I think it seems obvious in retrospect, maybe, once you believe the delay thing, but I guess I don't know. There has been some work on actually intentionally slowing things down to figure out where that slows the whole program down, but that doesn't tell you the same thing.
Right.
And it tells you something that may be on the critical path. But if you've got ties, you can't distinguish between those.
Thank you.
So, yeah, thank you.
So can this approach be also applied inside the operating system kernel, do you think?
Sure. there's nothing particularly, I can't think of anything that would be a huge issue. It's, right now, all of the profiler code runs within the application process. And so it's already in an environment where it can't, like you can't call locks inside the profiler and all of that because you could have interrupted the program while holding the heap lock, for example. Mm-hmm. So you could probably do it. I'm sure it would be a fair amount of work, but there's nothing like actively hostile to that environment.
All right, excellent, yeah. Thanks.
So one thing that I was wondering is whether you could also extend that approach to do I/O profiling. So could I, for example, use it to reason about the speed up that I could expect if I, for example, replace a regular disk with an SSD?
Yeah, so a fair amount of the complexity in the system actually comes from dealing with different sources of threads suspending. So a thread may suspend because it's waiting for another thread, or may suspend because it's waiting for I/O, and we want to do different things depending on which of those it is. So we can already isolate the IO-related delays from the thread-related delays. And you certainly could virtually speed up the arrival of an IO completion and see what that does. That would be interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Good question.
Hi. Hajime from IIJ Japan. I was really impressed with this work. I mean, I really tried to want to use with my code. But I was wondering, is there any limitation for the usage of this tool? Like if I use some LD preload technique in my application, can I use this? Or?
I believe there may be a comment somewhere in there that says, should fix this later. Mm-hmm. What if they use LD preload? So there's no reason you couldn't, but it may not save your LD preload because cause also gets injected with an LD preload. So it would be a one-line change if it doesn't already support that. Oh, it's been a while since I looked at that piece
of the code. What kind of, injection did you use for with the LDP, no?
So it interposes on libc start main just to sort of register its own startup right before any constructors run. So
okay, yeah. Thank you.
Great, so let's thank Charlie again.